This ESPN Chicago podcast is brought to you by Cover 5, the free-to-play sports game. This week, Cover 5 is giving you a shot at $50,000. How? Download the Cover 5 app or go to cover5.com. Pick five games against the spread, and in week five, if you make the perfect five picks, you win $50,000. Cover5.com.
Blur, song number two. I know that one for you,
Lionel. Oh, you do?
I can give you that one. Yeah, that one's more in my time frame growing up. So that was late
90s. Who is it?
Blur.
Blur. That's the name of the band?
That is B-L-U-R. Song number two.
Okay.
So good for you. I can give you that one.
By the way, I watched the film this morning.
You did?
I watched half of it. I watched the first half. I'm not going to lie, offensively, boy, it's hard to watch. And it's like everybody takes turns screwing up.
Yeah.
But my, you know, at this point, I would tell you, and again, I'll watch the second half later. And I want to preface this with the following as well, because like there are a lot of stats out there and there are a lot of people that watch the film and everyone's welcome to their opinion and everything. I'm up front and telling you, I don't know exactly what's being asked of individual players on any given play. So I come in with that as my first thought. Like, I can't tell you exactly what the intent is for your left tackle. I don't know what the protection is called. I don't know what they've told the quarterback to do in certain things. So when I watch it, I try to keep a really open mind, knowing that I don't know everything.
I think, honestly, that's a great way to tell people, because that's full disclosure.
Yeah.
You're telling people, listen, there's things on this film that I don't know exactly. And that's when you see, you know, this is the criticism of something like Pro Football Focus. We understand.
Yeah, and I think Pro Football Focus does a really nice job, but how does Pro Football Focus know exactly what they're trying to do? And I think it's hard. And I think that as time goes on, they get better at identifying what exactly, and they probably have consultants that tell them and teams that have interaction with them that tell them what the basic intent is. But like, I can't sit here because I'm not in the meeting room. So, like, I don't know what they're coaching certain players to do. So I think for me, and I won't speak for anyone else, but for me, when I do watch the film, I try to have a really open mind about different things, because although I have played the sport since I was 8 years old, it doesn't mean I know everything, A, and certainly it doesn't mean that I know what their intent is on each and every play. But the things that I see are all of the things that people are talking about. Like, the pass protection isn't clean all the time. The receivers don't create a ton of space at times. The quarterback isn't helped out a lot. My biggest problem with and I thought Justin played better in this game than he did. I thought the game against the Texans was really bad on a number of fronts. Like, I can highlight one play here and one play there and go, wow, that was a good play.
Kaka.
But over the course of a 60-game a 60-play game, I thought it was better this time. I mean, I thought that there were some things. The first play of the game is, you know, he steps up in the pocket and rips, you know, an 18-yard hook route over the middle of the field. It was great. My biggest concern with him right now, and it's not a panic, is that I get it. He doesn't have a lot of help around him. But he doesn't help himself, because he too infrequently doesn't hit his layups. And I know people are getting tired of hearing that term, but it's the best way I can describe it. You're on an open break. You're on a fast break. You're open. There's nobody guarding you. This isn't a contested three. This isn't a mid-range jumper in traffic. This is an open layup that is something that can give you confidence. And he doesn't do it frequently enough. So at the end of the day, what ends up happening is he makes life harder on himself, because he's not hitting his layups.
Yeah.
That's what I'll be critical of Justin Fields for. Are there times when he's got no time to throw? No question. Are there times where receivers aren't creating space? No doubt. There are also times where he makes life more difficult on himself because he's not doing the simple things well enough. And that's what's frustrating, is because you would think that those things would be second nature to quarterbacks. And like, those are the things that I think that, like, I give you an example, and this is where things get clouded and they get convoluted. There's a play early in the game there in the red zone. It's a boot. Okay? So ultimately, he's going to read the guy on the end of the line. The guy gets to him quickly, then he's going to have to get rid of the ball. If he's got an open lane, he's going to run. The play develops, and he rolls to his left, and the pressure comes to him. It's an easy dump. Easy dump to Cole Kmet. And I will say this, and I want Cole to be a great player. Cole isn't open very often. So you have an opportunity, a positive play. Is it going to be the 12 yards for the touchdown? Maybe not. But at this point, what you're trying to do is take any positive play and then stack them up. And certainly, this is a remedial read.
Yep.
And instead of throwing the ball to Cole Kmet, he tucks and he tries to run and tries to beat the defender that is coming to him. And it ends up being a 2-yard loss. Do you know what that is registered as?
A sack.
Correct. So this is where when you say Justin is the most sacked quarterback in the league, and there are moments where Larry Borum is a turnstile and Justin has no chance.
Yep.
I'm not trying. There's times when Sam Mustipher gets beat at the snap.
Yeah, he's in his lap.
Those are all valid things. I'm just telling you what I want to see for him, and I think it will be what helps him most, is if he can just bring all of his own expectations down and just say, hey, when the flat's open, I'm going to hit it. Like, he's probably used to coming from a system where he was reading high to low.
Yes.
Like, when you're running I've said this a million times, when you're running a post-dig combination with Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave against the Indiana Hoosiers, with no disrespect meant to the Hoosiers, that's a different animal than what you're being asked to do on Sunday. So sometimes, instead of waiting for that post to open up 4 seconds down the field, the right thing to do is to hit the running back in the flat. That may be a 4-yard gain, but guess what it is? It's a positive play that you put in the back of your mind, and it's something that you build on. So for me, I'm not going to be overly critical of him because he doesn't throw for 250 yards. I give a rat's ass about his yardage total.
Sure.
I want to see him first and foremost do the little things well, because, Jeff, I think it's something he can build on. And it's just like, the moments don't happen frequently enough I'm 55 years old. We need positive reinforcement. And when you're not getting it, even when it's under your control, then it can start to spiral. So that was just one of the plays. Like, there are other plays where, you know, he's got no chance. I get it. The other thing, he's just, you know, here's another. I said to you, we were upstairs talking. Look, I know the stat is his receivers are, what, fifth or sixth in separation. That's a BS stat in a lot of ways. Like, a great receiver, like Justin Jefferson, may have a ton of separation. But that doesn't mean you can't throw it to Adam Thielen, who doesn't have as much separation.
Yeah.
Like, and at this point, even if you know you're not getting much separation, still throw the ball. Throw it to me. I don't have any separation because I'm really not, I can't get past people. Then it's up to me to make the catch. Trust me to make the catch. If I don't make the catch, that's on me.
You.
That's not on him. Another example of a play, I mentioned it yesterday, he can't make any progress. Of course he can. And I'll give you the example again today where the play ended up being a negative play, but Justin made great progress on it. It was the back shoulder throw to Pettis.
Mm-hmm.
Steps up in the pocket, rips it. Perfect throw. Tough throw because it's a contested throw. A throw that's a tough catch for a receiver. But Pettis has got to make the catch. What did Pettis do? He dropped the ball.
Yep.
At the end of the day, it's a negative play. You're going to tell me that's not progress for Justin? That's tremendous progress for him.
And the truth is, I know that Justin Fields is capable of the spectacular.
Yes.
Physically, what we've seen from him at times, the best plays look amazing.
Yeah.
The truth is, and I also believe he's smart enough from everything I've heard from him, that he'll crush the tape, he'll do the work. He just needs to listen to the coaches. I believe Luke Getsy is doing this. And to your point, take the easy throws. Because even if it's, if you make it second and four versus first and ten.
Well, you know what else you're doing? You're helping your offensive line that's not equipped to hold people out 40
times
a game.
And the entire playbook is open to Luke Getsy on a second and five, second and six. Whereas every time if it's second and ten or second and nine.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it becomes that much more difficult on the play caller. And then you, again, it compounds itself.
So this is, again, like, just to kind of summarize, look, when I see it, it ain't pretty. It's not. Luke Getsy also called 30-plus pass plays. So for people that are screaming that, like, and I'm one that I want them to be more aggressive, but in the context of how you're approaching situations. Third and two from the 4-yard line. If you're going to run it, I hope you're going for it on fourth. fourth and two at the end of the game for a kid, you know, you give him a chance to make a play instead of going into a shell and punting it. Halftime against the Houston Texans. Let's try to get something before the half. Let's put the kid out there and play with some pace. Those are the things that I want them to be aggressive with. Luke Getsy called 30-plus pass plays. Like, I think he threw it 22 times. He was sacked 6 times, and, like, there were 6 or 7 runs. So, I mean, there were plenty of pass plays that were called out there. It's disjointed. It's not an overly talented group. The quarterback isn't doing the little things as well as he needs to take pressure off of him. At the end of the day, do you know what the conclusion is? This is a rebuilding season. So keep your expectation levels for the quarterback and their overall productivity at a reasonable spot.
That's the voice of former Bears wide receiver Tom Waddle. I'm Jeff Meller in for Sylvie today, who's off for the holiday. This is Waddle and Sylvie. Special early edition of Waddle and Sylvie as we have the final White Sox game coming your way at 2:30 today, along with an extended post-game show. Connor McKnight will give you a breakdown of the entire White Sox season for 2 hours after the game is over, up until 8 o'clock today. So stay tuned for that as the White Sox conclude a disappointing season. But up till then, you've got yourself a bonus edition of Waddle and Sylvie. Justin Fields just met the media a little while ago. To your point, him tucking and running, he talked about when he decides to tuck and run in some of those situations.
For the most part, I mean, sometimes, you know, you're going to have, you know, guys open. Sometimes, you know, you're not going to make the, you know, perfect decision every time. And, you know, you just got to live by that and just move on to the next play.
The fact that you've been so successful scrambling, does that affect your decision-making at all?
I try not to make it too. So with the Marie's, and, you know, if I need to get out of the pocket, just get out of the pocket.
Is that hard with human nature, knowing that, you know, if you are running at a pretty good clip, to not pull it down there?
Not really. I think every play is different. So, you know, just evaluating each play, you know, if it's a certain play, and, you know, guys aren't there, of course, and I'm going to have to get out the pocket. So, yeah.
He doesn't want to be there, does he?
No, he doesn't. But you know what? I thought that was interesting, though, because I don't think you said it on the air, but we were talking upstairs before the show. There's a play where you pointed out Equanimeous St. Brown.
The second play of the game.
Was running
clean pocket. And, like, look, you know, he decided to run instead of stepping up and throwing the ball, and it was a 12-yard in route. And, like, these are all things he's going to learn. Like, it's not hopeless, but these are the moments where a running quarterback who may be a little gun shy because he is getting hit quite a bit, just trust it. If you see it and it's open, throw it. And he's probably, you know, making sure he doesn't want to make the big mistake. I would be trying to coach him this way if it was me. Dude, throw it.
Yeah.
If it's intercepted, who gives a rat's ass? We'll live with it.
If
it's the right read and you're at least going to give your guy an opportunity to make a play. And while you don't think it's open, there's a chance that in the NFL, some of these things are open. A lot of balls that you throw to different receivers, even if it's not Justin Jefferson, you know, a quarterback learns just to trust his receiver to make a play for him. And guess what? If the receiver doesn't make the play, you get back in the huddle, we'll do it again.
Yes.
You know, just like it's not a catastrophic.
And you build that trust by actually going through the positive reinforcements. You said you throw it up and you have Equanimeous St. Brown, who's probably got the biggest catch radius on your team, at least until... by the way, a little piece of news for the folks out there. And Keel Harry, is the 21-day window for him to return from injured reserve is now open. So he's going to go through individual drills. Matt Eberflus told the media that earlier today. Cody Whitehair is going on short-term injured reserve, which we all knew was going to be the case. He's going to miss at least 4 games.
Now again, like, listen to what I'm saying. I'm not telling you. Every team in our division has a better receiving core, even the Green Bay Packers, all of them.
Yep.
Their receiving cores are all better than ours. There's no doubt about it. But you still have to try and make the throws when they you know, present themselves.
I will say, you know what?
I thought he played much. The bar is really low. I mean, I thought there was improvement, certainly. I thought the Texans game was really, really rough.
I'm much more excited about the news of N'Keal Harry potentially returning than I ever thought I would be when they first brought him in. Because the truth was, as a reclamation project, I wasn't overly excited about it. But what he showed in the preseason, I became a little bit, this is a big body who's got the pedigree, and maybe you can actually unearth something, especially when you look at what Justin Fields currently has at his disposal.
Yeah, and I think size is an important issue here, no pun intended, because when you are worried about a lack of separation, if I got a guy like N'Keal Harry or a guy like Equanimeous St. Brown, while I may desire more separation,
Yes.
I know that those guys both have a physical advantage, usually height and arm length and everything, over the cornerback that's playing this.
To summarize, Tom Waddle says size matters. Let's try Chase on the south side. Chase, what's going on, my man?
Hey, what's happening, fellas? How you guys doing?
Chase, what's up?
Waddle, what's happening, my man?
Oh, you know, it's just another beautiful day in Chicago.
Oh, yes, sir. Hey, Waddle, I got to ask you a question. So you remember when you was talking about the who's responsible? Well, before I go further, I would say you can put the regards of McCaskey and Ted for not getting rid of the old regime. You remember you said why this was the reason why you said they should have got rid of everybody beginning?
Yes.
Because this is where this all started. Well, and I want to ask you something, Waddle.
That's a fair chase. That's a fair statement because you are 100% correct. If, in fact, you were going to put those guys on the clock, there's no reason you should have given them the opportunity to draft another quarterback and develop that quarterback because both the GM and the coach failed to do that job well with the guy before.
Right. And so, like, my question to you is, and I need your opinion, do you think that if – now, I'm not saying that Pace – of course, we all agree Pace and the old regime should have been gone. But do you think that if they had – let's say they did keep Pace. And, okay, Nagy's gone, but let's say they did keep Pace. Do you think that Fields' development may be a little better now because the fact they Pace probably would have prioritized building around him, knowing that this is a guy, and that maybe he probably would have traded for those receivers like Mech? Let's say he made a trade for Devontae Adams or somebody like A.J. Brown. Do you think possibly because this was, because Pace is known to be trading picks away, do you think that the development of Fields would be a lot further along right now than it is with this new regime, knowing that this is not their guy and that they're not.
Chase, I think it's a valid point that if the previous regime was still in place, obviously they were going to run things differently because they weren't in rebuild mode at that point. They're under pressure to build.
The seat was hot.
Yeah,
and they knew it.
Yeah, so I mean, would Ryan Pace have done things like, you know? But would he have mortgaged the future for the here and the now to put more around Justin Fields? I think you could make the assumption that that would be the case. Whether or not that would advance his development is,
because under that
still
scenario,
a question mark.
Luke, is Matt Nagy still your offensive or your offensive coordinator / head coach in that situation? Very likely. I would hope they wouldn't have gone forward.
Like my.
Watching the universe, that's not happening.
Yeah, and watching the film to me kind of leaves me in the same spot. Like, I'm not intensely angry about really anything because I'm exercising patience. I have a low bar. I just want to see development. And if I see the quarterback start to do the little things better, which makes life easier on him, that to me is step one in his growth.
Let's try Mark, who's down in the Big D in Texas. Mark, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing? How you guys doing?
Good.
All right. Well, I'm not trying to be the offensive coordinator, but I'm going to play the offensive coordinator for a second. What I suggest for them to do, I'd like to see Justin Fields play from behind center for a little bit on Sunday and then try to get the ball out to Mooney just to get him into a rhythm. And I like what you said earlier a few minutes ago and trying to build a rhythm where you get the ball and do some easy passes where the receivers are open. And where he can do that, and then and try to, because shouldn't Montgomery be available this week? So I know he was out against the Giants, and run the ball and have a ball control offense and control the ball against the Vikings.
Well, I don't know what Montgomery's status is going to be. I think that from a play calling standpoint, I thought you saw great balance this weekend. I think they called better than 30 plays. Again, like there are a couple of boots. Like anyone who's thinking, oh, they're not getting him out on the edge. No, they're getting him on the edge. I mean, teams are defending it, but they're getting him on the edge. And I gave you the one instance. There was another instance where he airmailed the ball over Herbert's head in another kind of boot flat route. It's the reason why his completion percentage is 51%.
Yeah.
Because he's missing those. Like, I'm with you. I would call some hitches. I would call some slants. And, when your outside guy is slanting, obviously your inside guy is going to the flat. I mean, at the very least, throw it to the flat. It's a two-yard gain, but at least it's a positive play.
We were on the air when Matt Eberflus met the media. I haven't seen any news about David Montgomery. I don't know if it was addressed with Matt Eberflus. So I would be surprised, though. I mean, I would not be surprised if he misses another week or two with the injury that we saw.
But I think they're confident, too. Like, listen, I think overall, I've said it, and I'll stand by it. I think David Montgomery's a better running back. I think Khalil Herbert is very adequate for what they're asking him to do, so I don't think it's a huge step down.
Yeah.
And I think that they're comfortable with him carrying the heavy load as well while David's out.
The biggest issue is not so much for me when Herbert's in the game. It's when Herbert, who usually gives Montgomery a breather, when he's not in the game, that's where you actually suffer the most.
The one thing that he struggles with, and I don't know, Herbert. I'd have to go back and look if Montgomery's better at it. Herbert is not very good in blitz pickup.
Yes, yes.
He's not very good in pass pro to help out his quarterback in blitzing situations. And you can bet your sweet behind that teams will look at what, you know, Wink Martindale did as the defensive coordinator for the Giants, and they're trying to heat him up, and they're going to try and make Justin make really quick decisions.
Yep.
So you got to put the game plan together as well with that in mind, knowing that teams, you know, that's out there. There's film out there if that's what they're going to try to do.
He's Waddle. I'm Meller, in for Sylvie today. Early because of the White Sox game, we're in for Carmen and Yurko, who were up earlier than us. We cross-talked with them at noon. If you want, you can check out the Carmen and Yurko podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. Full phone lines. We're taking your calls, talking Bears as they get set to take on the Vikings. Jeff Meller, in for Sylvie on Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
Meller and Waddle hanging out with you until 2:30 when the White Sox have their season finale at Guaranteed Rate Field against the Minnesota Twins. That's why the Waddle and Sylvie show is on early today, taking you up until White Sox pregame coverage begins. And I'm Jeff Meller, in for Sylvie, who has the day off because of the Jewish holiday.
Connor has, what, a two-hour recap of the season after the game?
I believe it's going to rough. I think we're assuming it's going to be around 2 hours, right, because they're going to go up until 8 o'clock, so... Right? Is that the plan, Tyler? Am I correct?
That is correct.
That?
Yep.
So whenever
8
you know,
o'clock.
So yeah, man, you
a
know
torturous
what?
Recap of what was a very disappointing season, brought to you by Connor McKnight, who's done a fabulous job all season long. What?
No, I think
am I right or am I wrong?
I think you've hit it on the nose.
You're there. A White Sox fan. You can't be excited about what transpired this season. This has got to be one of the more frustrating years in baseball watching life.
And you know, it's funny because when Miguel Cairo took over for Tony La Russa because he left due to the health issues that have plagued him, you know, I thought we saw a little bit of evidence that had they actually had the foresight or had Jerry Reinsdorf embraced the idea of making a change at the managerial position at the All-Star break, the timeline that I pointed to and said, you know what, this is your perfect opportunity. You've got a ready-made replacement. You've got an ass kicker in the booth in Ozzie Guillen, who you know will go in and if nothing else, put a charge into those players. The bump that they saw under Miguel Cairo, I think, would have been there for sure had Ozzie Guillen come in. I wish they would have done it then. I don't think Ozzie Guillen's the best. I don't think he'd be the best name to make a move and change now. I don't think he'd be the best replacement for Tony La Russa.
I think it was a great suggestion at the time. I'm not so sure, based on watching this team, how they were constructed and how they went about playing the game, even with a kick in the rear end, I'm not so sure that bump would have lasted enough to get you into the postseason. You may have seen an uptick the way you did for a short period of time, and then that team went back to being who that team is going to be.
They did, but the truth is, too, that the Guardians, you know, put that nail in their coffin and that's it. Like, the last 10 days, listen.
They were still a 500 team. They vacillated between two over and...
You're right.
Three over and two under, whatever.
You're right, Wides, but I think there were plenty of opportunities where if they had somebody in the dugout who put it, you know, set a fire under their ass, things could have been different. And we'll never know because it played out the way it did.
Yeah.
And now we'll see who Rick Hahn and the White Sox choose to be the next manager of the White Sox. You know, whether or not... Ozzie has, you know... said he'd be open to the idea.
Well, he says he's the perfect guy for the job, right? Because he knows
he said
more
he knows
about them
better.
Than anyone.
Has he said he's the perfect guy, though? He's
well, kind I of, thought that was the implication.
I think he straddled the...
He said it without saying it. Okay. He says, no one knows the White Sox better than I do.
But I don't think... I think the point is that maybe they want a different...
Well, didn't Rick say yesterday that they were going to they're looking for someone that was in the in the dugout
within recently so that was a way of saying
and I would think that would also eliminate AJ Pierzynski too, wouldn't it?
Based on what he said, if that's part of the what they're looking for, the actual what they want, the credentials from their next manager, then yes, that would be the case. Let's try Greg, who's in Griffith, Indiana, wants to talk some Bears that we've been breaking down all day today. What's up, Greg?
Gentlemen, how you doing today?
We're doing well.
Okay. All right. You know, we got to look at the Bears situation the way that they're looking at it. I honestly think they don't care about the record. That's not what they're trying to do. We got to go back to what Pace did. He sold the future of this team to try to steal a championship now. He had the defense. He thought he had a good quarterback. He thought he had some good position players that he could win enough to go to the championship. He didn't understand he's got Aaron Rodgers in his division. And we're not going to win with what we have with guys like Aaron Rodgers in our division. Now, we bring in Poles, and I got to give it to the guy. He's doing it the right way. He's not selling our future. He understands you have to build a team through the draft. You have to be a good management person to do this. And Eberflus is a good motivational coach. He's got a bunch of young kids. We have a 53-man roster with 33 guys who've never been on this team, and a third of those guys have never been on a professional field. Okay, Justin Fields was excellent in the shallow end of the pool, but now he's in the deep end of the pool, and he has no experience. And no one around him with the experience on how to swim in the deep end of the pool. The guy's running scared. Okay, he's worried he's going to get hurt because he has.
Okay, hold on, Greg. Greg. He's not afraid he's going to get hurt. I reject that notion.
Otherwise, he wouldn't tuck and run as frequently as he does.
Yeah, he that's. I'm sorry. Like listen.
I will say this though about what Greg said is like. Listen, I follow along with what he is saying, and it's been kind of what my mantra has been is that. Lower your expectations, complete rebuild. I know there are people that are apoplectic about the fact that they didn't go out and spend a bunch of money on offensive linemen and didn't use picks on and free agent money on wide receivers. They've chosen to take the other route.
Yep.
Now, we'll find out whether or not this is the right route or not. I would preach patience with all of it.
I think the form that we're in obviously doesn't lend itself to saying, hey, 4 games into the season, they're 2-2. Part of it is reactionary, what we do here. I understand that. And Justin Fields has not looked like he's like the and listen, it's not going to be progress. It's not always linear when it comes to quarterback play in the NFL.
It's true.
I understand that. And I think most people who watch the NFL do understand that. But I think the truth is, too, 4 games in, has anything jumped off the page at you or jumped off the field at you where you're like, what I've seen from what Ryan Poles has constructed?
What's jumped off the page at you is that offensively they have set some historic lows in recent football history.
Yeah.
That's what has jumped off the page at people. It's what's on the front of everyone's brain. And I get it. Like I said, there's people screaming out loud that, they're ruining Justin Fields. This is what I would say to the people screaming. When he starts improving on the easy things, his life is going to become, it'll be better.
Sure.
But for his own development, he's got to start hitting his layups and start being better at the easy stuff. And when that happens, I think you'll see him build some confidence. He'll play with a little bit more of a swagger and things will be, things will calm down and slow down for him.
Let's try Barry, who's in the Southern Burbs. Barry, what's going on? You're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
So a couple of things that I want to point out, man, is that I saw something the other day that says that Justin Fields is probably under pressure more than any other quarterback in the NFL, and his receivers get less separation than most quarterbacks, right? So what I want to do is I want to use a game that was played a couple of weeks ago as an example of how that can affect you. Go back and look at Green Bay versus Tampa Bay, right? We had two of the greats. We got Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. The score in that game was 14-12. And the reason that was is because the quarterbacks were under pressure, and they were missing easy throws, and they didn't have anybody to throw to. So now you look at Tom Brady when he lost to Kansas City, he had his receiving quarterback and everything else, a completely different person. I'm trusting this regime, and this is the first time that I've said this about the Bears organization in a long time. He's not wasting money. He's not trying to get us one-hit wonders to get us all excited. You know, we got the name, whether it's Mac or Cutler or whatever the case might be, but we can't win anything. This guy is going to make us great, these two guys, if you give them about 3 years and not run them out of town. That's all I want to say. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, Barry. I would just be careful with, and just like I said, as I introduced my thoughts on what I saw when I watch film, and I have a completely open mind, or try to, there are stats out there that will tell completely opposite stories. Barry gave you the ones that basically tell you that Justin Fields has no time and no help. There are others out there that Hembo gave on Greeny's show, and I think Courtney Cronin has done great work, and she's got a fantastic article on ESPN.com right now kind of explaining some of the stuff. The numbers that ESPN produces will tell you the opposite story. Like, it's really unbelievable how different the presentation is using the different numbers. So I gave you the example of there's a play in the first half. He gets sacked six times, and you say, oh, my God, no one can live in an environment where he gets sacked six times. He's been sacked 16 times this year. I would tell you to go back and look at and make the determination. How many of those sacks are the responsibility of, we admit, a below-average offensive line, and how many of those sacks are a direct result of the quarterback not having good feel in the pocket? And the example I gave you is early in the red zone when they called a boot, and Cole Kmet comes wide open, and instead of dumping the ball to Cole Kmet for a positive play, Justin tucks and runs, gets tackled for a two-yard loss. That goes down as a sack on the stat sheet, and there's no way that that sack is going to be placed on the offensive line. That sack is a direct result of the quarterback making a bad decision. And when those plays go away, that's when I'm saying to you the real growth will take place. When he decides, look, I don't have to make this play all by myself. What I'm going to do is trust my eyes that, by the way, see a wide open receiver 5 yards in front of me, and I'm going to give him the ball. That, to me, is going to be the sign where you say, okay, progress is about to take place.
Yeah, we had so much going on yesterday. I think Sylvie wanted to play this. We never did. So since you just brought it up right now, some of the people who are defending, you know, Justin Fields, I think this was Dan Orlovsky yesterday on Get Up. I know they played it on Cap and Jay Hood yesterday morning. I know Sylvie wanted to play it yesterday. We never got around to it. So I'll play it right now. Dan Orlovsky breaking down Justin Fields and the Bears this season.
I told Bears fans this all summer long. Don't talk to me about Justin Fields' development. You've got a fifth-round pick starting at left tackle. He might become a really good player, but that is not ideal. Yep. He has literally one of the worst pass-blocking offensive lines in the last decade of the NFL. Yeah. I said this. Your number one receiver is really a number three. Darnell Mooney's a good player. He's going to continue to be. He's not a number one.
Yeah.
So his number two receiver is really like a five. His starting tight end, Cole Kmet, what?
Looks like a tackle.
I mean, right now he looks like a tackle. So to talk to me about can we evaluate Justin Fields is one of the dumbest questions in football. And Bears fans wanted to tell us, how dumb we were. No, we're not. Your offense isn't good enough to evaluate a young quarterback. Justin Fields, this is the one thing you have to do. Hang the heck in there. And don't allow what's happening in Chicago to ruin what your career can potentially be in the future. That's the only thing.
I'll leave it there for the moment. There's not a word you just said that I disagree with.
Quarterbacks protecting quarterbacks.
And listen, Dan makes good points about certain things, but what he also did was completely absolved a quarterback from any responsibility for any mistake that may happen on the field offensively. And that, to me, is putting your head in the sand.
And I'll
I just gave you an example. You can scream as loud as you want and tell me that the Bears haven't put enough around him. When the quarterback boots left and decides to make the decision that Justin made instead of throwing the ball to Cole Kmet, who I said to you earlier isn't open very often, That's a Justin Fields decision-making problem. And until he... Listen, you can develop better mechanics. You can develop better decision-making. That's an example. What I just laid out to you has nothing to do with the ineffectiveness of your offensive line. Cole Kmet finally open. You've got time. Play design is good. You as the quarterback didn't execute it properly, and it's not a felony to point that out. It's just not.
And you know what? I'll throw this at Dan Orlovsky. Time waits for no man. The truth is that you give me the long list of quarterbacks who have gone on and had successful careers after it failed for them in their first go, wherever, whatever team you want to pick. Give me that long list. It's very short. You know what? This side of, and we can also quibble about someone like Ryan Tannehill, who's actually done that and had a successful second half of his career in a different location. And even that isn't necessarily where you want it to be if you're talking about first round quarterbacks, you know, and going on and succeeding. The truth is that fine, hang it. I Dan Orlovsky, Justin Fields can hang in and try and just ride it out until next year. But by the way, Matt Eberflus, Luke Getsy, Ryan Poles, they're assessing what they're seeing right now. And to your point, he's got to be better. Yes, hopefully next season they'll surround him with more talent. But the truth is, if they don't like what they if they don't like the conclusion they come to with him,
they can pivot.
They may, based on the record and where they're at this season and where they're drafting next year, they may say, you know what? This is a Josh Rosen situation. Give me the next Kyler Murray in the draft.
You're right. Listen, my guess is Dan is yelling at all the people that were yelling at him when the season began, because Dan said, look, this is going to be a bottom team in the league. They don't have enough talent. They're going to struggle. And then everyone screamed they were defending their Bears. This team's going to be better than you think they are. How in the world can you tell us that they're the 32nd ranked team? That's where I think that conflict begins. I just don't subscribe to the theory. This is the NFL. This isn't high school. I don't subscribe to the theory that the quarterback can't be held accountable for doing his job, especially the little things, doing them the right way. And I do believe, and I gave you an example of a play that ended up being a negative play with Dante Pettis dropping the ball. That's growth from the quarterback. You can make growth and make progress in a less than perfect situation. And that's why the expectation level for all of us is so low.
Yep.
Because we know he's not in a good situation, but his life will be easier. He can make life easier for himself when he starts to do the little things better.
That's the voice of former Bears wide receiver Tom Waddle. I'm Jeff Meller in for Sylvie today, as we're on early because the White Sox baseball is coming your way, the final game of the season at 2:30. Up next, have you ever gotten in trouble in school for a silly reason?
Yeah.
My son did. I'll show you what it was next.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
I'm Jeff Meller in for Sylvie today on Waddle and Sylvie, as we're on early because of White Sox baseball, the final game of the season, game 162. Between the Twins and White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field. Of course, we will have an extended post-game show for you wrapping up the season as well. Connor McKnight will be your driver for that one. And, of course, we have White Sox and Twins coming your way at 3:07 first pitch, 3:10?
I think so. I hope Connor has a nice vacation planned for himself.
I
go away for a week or 10 days and get away from it.
I would bet he does, especially with the brand new baby on the way here very soon for him in the winter months. So maybe he will get away for a little bit. I mentioned, though, a baby there. I have myself twins, boy and a girl, and my son, Alex Waddle.
Yeah.
He got in trouble the other day at his junior high.
So is he in seventh grade?
He's in seventh grade. First year of junior high for him.
He's not a troublemaker. I know that by nature.
He is not.
He's usually on the soccer field or somewhere else doing something athletic on the ski slopes.
Absolutely. You are. It's a good background for the listeners out there to know that. He came home the other day, and as he walked into the door, my wife said to him, Alex, I need to talk to you.
Uh-oh.
And it was
at least based on her telling of it to me, it was just a very, hey, Alex, I need to talk to you. Maybe the way I said it there initially was sounded a little more stern than it actually was. She said, hey, Alex, I need to talk to you. He walks into the kitchen with a look on his face like he's seen a ghost, and he says to her, did Mr. Alvarez call you?
Oh, boy. He just... He gave it up. He gave it up.
Without even knowing.
Wow. Wow. And I got to talk to him.
Listen, you know what?
Hold out until the final moment.
That's because he's naive and has never been in a situation before where this has been a problem. And so he immediately gives it up. And no, Mr. Alvarez had not called Michelle. And Michelle, my wife, said, no. Why? And he kind of stuttered and stammered and kind of mumbled underneath his breath.
Any tears?
No tears.
Okay.
She said, why? What happened? And he said, I had to go down to Mr. Alvarez's office today, and I don't know why. And she said, "What? You know how when you're kid, I don't know why. You know that's...
He knew exactly
why.
Yeah. Not sure why I had to go to the teacher's office, but I went down to the teacher's office.
So he says, he gives it up, and he says, I got in trouble in school for things I searched on YouTube.
Uh-oh.
This generation, I'm sure Tyler's...
YouTube?
Tyler and Charlie. In school, if anything... And this is the thing. My son knows. They all, actually, anyone in the junior high, they're well aware that their searches...
Maybe they should listen to Mark Sanchez, who I think on an NFL telecast actually told his kids to get rid of everything, right?
Right, yeah, clear your history. But no, but anything you search, it goes through a process not dissimilar to what we're subject to in the office place where we try and search things and we get, you know, the good karma block. No. You can't see this in the New York Post because it's too salacious or whatever.
I was just looking up the story about the chess cheating,
yes.
You know? And
were you able to get through the filters?
Probably not. I haven't tried.
Okay. So he went to go search on YouTube. And I kid you not, the search term that he went to plug in, quotes, how to use lube. How to use lube.
Seventh grader.
Was blocked. And then he got summoned down to Mr. Alvarez's office. Mr. Alvarez.
Well, lube could be anything.
Mr. Alvarez put him through the Spanish Inquisition. What are you doing? Why are you searching for how to use lube on YouTube? And Alex...
He said he was changing the tires on my dad's SUV.
Alex...
And we needed to lube the axle.
Alex had just gotten permission from mom and dad to use his funds to purchase lubricant, easy for me to say, for his collection of Rubik's Cubes, Waddle, which I'm showing you right now.
Why is he using lube on Rubik's Cubes?
So here's the thing.
Is he a speedster?
Yes. Yes,
so
Tyler.
He doesn't, like, get blisters on his hands?
Well, no, he's trying. He wants to maximize his
speed.
Or
is he so damn smart that he's selling you that, but he really does want lube.
But here's the thing, though. He knows that his search history or whatever is being monitored, especially because he's doing it at school.
Yeah.
So, and I'll show you, Tyler.
What kind of lube?
I don't know.
What's he looking for?
I'm not a cuber. I'm not going to lie. This is a world I'm unfamiliar with. You know what? Had he asked his dad, hey, how do you use lube? I probably would have taken him down a dark alley that we never needed to go down.
Right.
He, honest to God, had no idea. And Mr. Alvarez was put in a position where he didn't believe Alex. He didn't believe Alex was searching.
Well, for a seventh grader, I would think that the lube for a Rubik's Cube speed, whatever, would be a better explanation or a more reasonable one than for a seventh grader to go down the other way.
This is my point. And I was actually...
Does he not have any background on Alex? Would he not know that's...
Listen, they're only a month into junior high, so he may not know him well enough.
He must think he's a derelict.
I have to teach Mr. Alvarez some cube culture.
Yeah, but, right.
So here's the thing, though. He still has no idea. And then, so he goes in, and Michelle's like, what's happening here? And he has no idea what the hell he searched up. And he then was like, well, why am I doing wrong?
The term lube, though? Where did he get the term lube? That seems like an odd term that you would use
That's a Mellor plant.
Yeah.
Mellor planted that in the kid's head.
He might have searched lubricant. I'm not going to lie. I'll have to go back and get a follow-up to this here. But then I may have to explain what he actually...
I actually think if you would have typed out lubricant... That is less damning.
Harmless search.
It's a more harmless search than if you just type in lube. I don't know why I feel that way, but do
you feel that way too?
No, I totally agree.
If you type in lubricant,
like WD-40,
you're like, okay.
Here's the thing. I'm telling it secondhand because Michelle relayed it to me. She said lube. I'll have to ask Alex if he put lube or lubricant. That'll be a follow up. We'll have to give the folks an update.
So at the
tomorrow.
End of the day, did you send him to the garage or did you send him to your upstairs cabinet?
I just neither. Listen, lube's lube, isn't it? Does it matter? WD-40?
Oh, I don't think you want to be spraying WD-40 on something sensitive.
Like your Rubik's Cube?
That may be, yeah. I mean, it may ruin your Rubik's
Cube. How's he supposed to set a record that way?
Under 7 seconds. That's impressive.
How quickly can he do a Rubik's Cube?
Under 30.
Really?
Dude, he's got, like, I'm joking.
Is there a pattern, though?
No, there's algorithms he has memorized.
I went to a school for nerds growing up for a little bit.
Oh, look at that.
What was it called?
Science and Arts Academy.
The school for nerds. This place.
And you ended up with us?
What went wrong?
You went to that school. You ended up with me and Sylvie and Meller?
I was a package deal with my brother, who's the real genius in the family.
I remember you telling me that. Is he still applying those traits?
Well, everyone there had like a Rubik's Cube phase, and they had the lube out, and they were like rubbing up their Rubik's Cubes and going speed
rounds. And you were like, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
Ty was like, get me the hell out of here.
Anybody want to hang out after school and lube some cubes?
I may be willing to narrate this or to actually bring you the play-by-play, but I ain't doing this.
He's like, I'm not solving that crap. No.
Wow.
All right, so
No, I've never had that issue. It was usually, you know, something more salacious than that.
You never lubed your cube, as Charlie said?
By the way, it was obviously, we're too old for computers. Computers weren't around at that time.
Yeah, no, I wasn't searching up things on YouTube when I was in school. That wasn't even, you know, something I did. Tyler probably and Charlie probably are young enough where that's been part of their experience.
Again, this is the advice I would give young Alex, though. Type in lubricant instead of lube, and I think that for whatever reason that will pass the smell test.
You know what it is? He's too lazy to type in lubricant. He probably just...
I don't even think it's lazy.
He plays for speed.
Exactly.
This is Waddle and Sylvie. I'm Meller in for Sylvie today. We will talk a little bit more Bears. Also, Bulls. They got things underway in the preseason. What is a reasonable expectation for Bulls fans? Well, one NBA expert, not giving them a whole lot of credit. We'll explain that next.